Okay, welcome to the Inveroy podcast. And today I've got the pleasure of talking to Jay Johnson, a colleague of Inveroy, same as myself. And today we're really going to talk a little bit about travel security. Obviously, with the pandemic, as the world returns back to normal, you know, the ability for employers to send their employees overseas is now stepping up. And as Jay is a regular, frequent traveler to various nice parts around the world, Jay's going to share with us some top tips of how we can look after ourselves and remain the grey man while travelling. So, Jay, hello, how are you?
I'm fine, thanks, and welcome for the invite. I've never done one before. It's my first ever podcast, so I'm looking forward to the questions and talking about something that I think I know a little bit about, a few little tips maybe for the new traveller or those seasoned travellers that may not have realised that there are people out there that will take advantage of us travellers.
Thanks. So I think it's important today is that we're going to talk a little bit about, you know, what you can do to protect yourself as a traveller. So I do think it would be remiss of me not to mention a little bit of the sort of the admin that's going to take place prior to travel, Jay. I think it's important. Yeah. You know what to do when something happens, and as an operations team looking after you, we know what to do when something happens. I mean, what are your thoughts on all the sort of the pre-admin that people might think, oh my God, not again, you know?
Yeah, it's very important, Sam. And the pre-admin is something you don't see when you're traveling. You don't realize that team is there, and that team, you know, has assessed your need to travel. And as you know, with any risk assessment, the first question we always ask is, do you actually need to travel? That is the first question that everyone should ask.
Yeah, I think you're right, mate. I think before you put yourself in harm's way, I think the importance of asking yourself that question, is this travel really important? And I suppose that leads on to the sort of the intelligence part and all that information you can get from you know, potential agencies that support you as to the state and regards of a country that you're traveling to.
Yeah, you're perfectly right. And you know, with the more common use now of our online video chats, a bulk of your work could actually be done before you travel, so you also limit your time if you do need to travel, which is also important.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, is that, you know, the use of MS Teams now across all the organisations not only sort of protects the environment, but actually says, well, actually, can we do this? But there'll always be times when a physical meet is required for you to get on the ground and meet the person or look at the environment building you're working in from.
Yeah, you need that. And that comes to the sharp end of this travel. You've done that pre-work. You've sat with your organisation, you've done the risk assessment, you've used your intelligence, you've spoken to the company on the ground, and you build that up so that traveller has got the best possible top cover they've got while they're travelling.
Yeah, definitely. You know, has he or she, they conducted heat training, you know, hostile environment training. You know, have they left all their next of kin details of the ops manager? Have they got a proof of life form? I mean, how many companies use proof of life forms? It's, if you get kidnapped, you're going to need something.
Yeah. And that's all that pre-admin stuff that people don't see, you know, and it's vitally important to have that, because all the prep work is brilliant, all the communication is brilliant, but there will be that time where you are alone. There's going to be that gap between your organization's cover and the company you're going to cover. And that's where you're traveling through your airports and your planes.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, all really relevant and good points, mate. So, I mean, that's a podcast in itself. But what we're going to do now, Jay, is if you can just give us a little bit of your personal experience, you know, when you leave that office and you make your way to the airport and you get to that airport in transit, what do you think's important, mate? I mean, things like hand luggage, backpacks, day sets.
I mean, I always break it down into three things. What I'm carrying personally within my clothing, what I'm carrying in the my hand luggage, which is normally the most common one, is your day sack, these ones that you throw over your back, and then your luggage that you put into the hold. And I break it down. And what goes into the hold is, right, I can do without that. If that doesn't tip up on the other side, what's in the bag and what I'm carrying will sustain me for 2-3 days maybe until we figure out what's happening with that luggage. So that's the first thing for me, is to break that down into these three segments. For the hand luggage, which, let's say, the most common one is your day sack, and they're brilliant, but they have lots of pockets, and they're easily accessible by those who want to access it in a crowded airport. And again, I break this down, and because we carry a lot of external stuff now, we have our eye patches for sleeping and our earplugs and, you know, hand sanitizer, mask, gloves, because this is the world we're in at the moment. I put these on the external pockets. I need them, but they're not vital. You know, if somebody wants to, a rogue hand wants to go inside a pocket and take away my small 50mm shaving foam, that's okay. I can live without that. So that's why I fill my outer pockets with. And I very rarely secure them, you know, the zipped or buttoned. And then I have the main compartment, and that's my for me personally, the stuff I can't do without. You know, it's your laptop, it's your tablet, it's the stuff you really don't want to lose. That goes in that main compartment for me. And I always carry a photocopy of my passport. And travel itinerary, that goes in that bag. And I'll explain why when I get into the personal stuff I carry on me. And again, the other thing I do, which slips most people's minds, we're really tied to our mobile devices now. Everything goes in there, our diary, our phone numbers. And you've got to think, if that was ripped away from you, can you contact someone? Do you know that even one number, where you can say, actually, I know that off by heart? A lot of us probably don't. So I just have 2 or 3 numbers, emails, on a bit of paper written down. That also goes with my photocopy passport. And that's just in case I lose, you know, the lifeline that is our mobile device. So that's the bag I carry, and I secure that. Again, because this is normally carried on the back, it's really easy for someone to just put the hand inside, and you won't know in a crowded place. So I secure it, and I use a little combination lock. And the only reason I use a little combination lock is because I'll lose the key if it was a keyed lock, because that's the kind of person I am. So I just have a little three-numbered personal lock, and then that's it. And, you know, just on this lock, don't go overcomplicated. It doesn't matter if it's 666-777-888. It's a deterrent. Somebody's not going to start filling. Say, actually, I reckon this guy is a 111 person or a 2. It doesn't really matter. It's a deterrent. And it's something you need to be able to remember, because we all forget numbers. So that's quite important. If you don't lock it, what I do, I have left without this little lock, a number of times, I zip it to one side. I don't close the compartment with a zip in the center of the bag. I move it to one side. And that's because I carry mine over one shoulder, like a lot of us do. And if that zip is close to your ear or close to the side you're carrying, you might be able to see in your peripheral vision, a hand that might want to test your security, or you hear your zip getting messed around with. So that's what I do. But obviously the best one is if you just stick a little lock on it. So I pause there to give you a chance to ask me a question before I move on to what I carry personally.
Yeah, I know, Jay, those are really handy top tips. I mean, you know, reading through the stats of people mugged in airports, it's just on the rise now. But I think, you know, if for those of you that have been in the military, you know, we always call this like our first line kit. This is kit that you just wouldn't want to be without, you know, but it's also kit that can get you, you know, sustain you for 24 hours. If you get stranded, you know, have you got enough money to get yourself something to eat? Have you got enough foreign currency?
Yeah, I mean, that's what I carry on me. I mean, the other good, the important thing is charges. Put that in your carry luggage, you know, your day sack. Don't put it in your check-in bag, because if that does get lost or you get delayed, you're going to need to charge your devices. A lot of them run down pretty quick. That's always a good top tip. Carry your chargers with you in your carry bag.
I mean, some people used to carry charging batteries, didn't they? But they're made of lithium and therefore they're quite combustible, and you might actually get returned. They might get taken off you if it's a danger to the aircraft.
Yeah, these little portable power packs, they do get taken away from you, and you now get asked when you're checking your luggage and if you do have these lithium batteries. Yeah, so it's a good one, that. So that's me, my day sack, or the one that's with me at all times. And, you know, just going back to if you're an unfortunate victim of being pickpocketed or robbed, they're so quick and they're so practiced that you won't know until maybe an hour, or you sit down to get a cup of tea and you think, I'll just check my laptop or my tablet, and it's not there because, you know, they are slick. So it's preempt it and plan for it. So on my person, now again, this is just a personal preference for me. I travel with traveling pants zipped pockets. And the main reason for this is not actually security for me getting pickpocketed, although they're very, very good deterrent. It's actually so I don't drop anything. You're sitting down in the lounge or the cafe, up and down, up and down. It's quite easy to drop something from your pocket. And again, because you're excited, maybe you're going on a holiday or you're traveling to work and you're distracted with what you need to do when you get there, it's easy to miss these type of things. And you'd be surprised if you phone an airport to say that you've lost your iPad. You'd be surprised the number of iPads they have waiting to be picked up. It's hundreds. It really is a lot. These things just get left behind or they're dropped. So yeah, I always travel with zipped pants. Like I say, it is a good deterrent. And what I have on me, I have obviously my travel documents and my passport, and I always keep these separate to my wallet, always. Again, I'm doubling up. You could lose one, but to lose two, that's really unfortunate. And the other reason I keep them separate is your passport is out more often than others, and so is your ticket. You're always checking your ticket. Even though you know your gate number, you'll check it 3 or 4 times just to check again. So this stuff you're always taking out. You don't want to be doing that in the same pocket as your wallet or opening your wallet to take your passport out, because you're just showing people what you've got. And people are looking for this. They'll say, look at that. That guy's got a whole list of corporate visas. I like that. I'll follow him. And they can lift it if you're unaware. So I always keep them separate. And I always carry cash. And dollar is the traveling king. It's accepted in almost every place. And that's my third line. If I have lost my wallet and I've lost the cards, you've got to eat. You've got to be able to maybe get a taxi to an airport, or, you know, while you sort out your contact your company and the embassy or whatever you need to do to retrieve your passport and travel documents. And I normally keep that separate as well. And they're with me. So I've got these three levels. I can lose me luggage. It's not a problem. I've got me traveling bag and what on myself, and that'll sustain me for 2 or 3 days. If I lose that, then I've got, hopefully, I've still got my wallet with my cards, my cash, and my passport that's on me, and my mobile phone, because that's always in our pockets. And that'll sustain me for 24 hours, maybe, until I can make those calls and activate the top cover, which should be provided by your company or the company you're traveling to.
Yeah, I mean, Jay, again, really salient points. I mean, I know I've been traveling myself and I'm going through countries where, you know, the crime rate's higher, you know, trying to keep a low profile to the potential assailant or the mugger. You know, I've noticed that, you know, we've got men have a tendency to wear great big shiny watches because it's a show of haven't I done well for myself, where actually it might be an idea just to take that shiny watch off and have like a cheap digital on. You know, also carry maybe a fake wallet that you could actually give to someone. If you get mugged, they'll get held at knife point with some currency in. I mean, they're all little top tips. Have you used them yourself?
I have, actually, yeah. And that's all part of the pre-risk assessment. They say, you know, I've travelled to countries where I've been told if you travel with that watch, they won't ask for that watch. They're taking a large hatchet and they're taking your hand and your wrist to get that watch. So I have used that, and I've got one of the cheapest watches I can find that I know will work, and it's fine. If you lose it, it's not a problem. You obviously don't want to lose it, but I've certainly travelled that way. One thing I've not done though, I've never carried a false wallet. That's a good one. I've never done that.
Yeah, I mean, if you have a false wallet with a few $1 bills in and a bit of sort of wallet confetti, as it's known as, bits of cardboard to bulk it out, that could buy you time just to throw it to someone with a knife or gun, and they'll run off with it and you've still got all your stuff on you, it's just thought.
Yeah, no, it's very good thought. These gangs, and they are gangs, it's very rare the individual are very clever. They are watching you, and that moment of distraction, especially if it's still within a fairly public place, will can buy you time. It's a good one, that.
Okay, so let's say we've survived the rigmarole of the airport, and we've actually got to our sort of destination, our hotel. I mean, I suppose if people need to know where you are, and if they're tracking you through your phone potentially. We've all got sort of phones now that have got locating devices on them through another organisation. I mean, I would definitely want to check in with somebody. What do you think?
Yeah, no, it's very good, and it's all part of your pre-assessment, where you will agree with your organisation that when I get to the hotel, I will check in so you know I'm there. A lot of us, will do this by the myriad of social medias, but it's important that we have that moment to the organisation, to that top cover, to say, look, I'm here. Once that's done, then you can do your selfies and post away, but get that important one in first.
Yeah, I think it's important that throughout your journey, just let people know where you are. I mean, it only takes a couple of minutes, but it just gives people that warm feeling, not just your family, but back in the ops room, that you've reached your destination and things are good. So, we've talked about check-ins. We've talked a little bit about scams and thieves. Is there anything you want to say about scams and thieves, mate?
There's some really common ones. And the most common one is the distraction method. And we all help. We're humans. We like to help. And when someone holds out, a gate card, says, I don't understand, you focus on that 100% because you want to help that guy. And he goes, what gate is this? And you're even bent down. He holds it away from you, which opens up everything. And his partners then have access to your backpack if it's on your back. It's a really common method, this distraction method. And same with, if you're carrying mobile phones, you see a lot of mobile phones in the rear pocket, half hanging out of jeans. Easy target for these guys. And they're quick. They'll distract you. It's out. And they'll disappear into the crowd. So just be aware of that. I'm not saying don't help. Please, don't be a mean traveller. If someone needs help, help them. But just be aware that it is a very, very common way to be distracted and then have things taken. And a scary one that's on the uprise is actually where they get physical. And this happens not so much in the airport, but when you're outside where the security is less, you'll get pushed. And as you get pushed forward, you only go forward 1 or 2 feet, you get a blocker who stands in the way. And that push distracts you. They'll even take the phone from your hand. And the person who takes it goes away, and a blocker will stand between you and the person go away. And it'll be a distraction. He'll be a big man, and he'll be pointing you the way, saying, oh, he's run that way. He's just buying time. And it does distract. And if you look on YouTube, you'll see, you see this happening in Europe a lot, in cities, not just the airports, where they'll work in groups. And they even employ elderly people. And they're the ones that are blockers, or even the ones that shove you and say, sorry, because we're less inclined to get angry with someone who's a little bit older than us. So, it's on the increase, that, and it's very difficult to mitigate against, other than just be aware.
I mean, elderly people just like you and me, Jay. Yeah.
Yeah, basically, yeah.
I mean, some
grey beards and sore knees.
Something I've seen myself is obviously traveling to South American countries like Panama is the potential for people to miss, you know, that placeholder mat of with your name on and actually go out and try and get a taxi. It's something that I've heard of quite a bit.
Yeah, I mean that's another big scam. You know, they'll promise you the world and the cheapest fares. Once you're in the back of that taxi, they can take you anywhere in that city that you do not know, and then demand what they want. And you will pay it because you're going to be frightened, you're going to be alone and in a part of the city that's not desirable. So just be aware of that. And that should be part of your assessment and planning. You know, if that man with your name plaque or that company's not there, do not get in any taxi, especially an unmarked taxi. It's just the exposure is just too high.
Yeah, no, definitely. So, you know, we've sort of, as I said, you know, we've reached our destination. We've survived the airport. We've survived the ordeal of getting from where we're going to a hotel. I mean, hotels are, they are strange things because, first of all, they're all different. They're all shapes and sizes. But one thing that remains pertinent is the chance of a fire or a bombing or, you know, some type of demonstration outside in high-risk areas. I mean, what are your thoughts on about choice of hotel, Jay, and actually living there for maybe a week to a month?
So there's two parts to this. The hotel, you've got the security side of it and you've got the health and safety side of it, the safety. Now, depending on the threat of fire is always there, and I'll talk about that separately in a second. But on the security side, this is all part of your planning, preparation, and speaking to the organisation you're travelling to, because security like you to be higher up. And that's just in case, if you're in a country that's got a high threat level. And we've seen on TV where we get gunmen running into the hotel and getting off as many rounds as they can before they're either killed or they finally escape. And security like to put you higher because they're less likely to get to you. And that's a good thing. But on the safety side, you actually want to be as low as possible. So it's finding that happy medium against the risk level. If there's no security threat, try and get lower down if you can. And this is through personal experience. I've been in a hotel fire 20 minutes after checking in, and it's very confusing. You don't really know which way you're going because you've not, you know, scouted your routes properly. You know which direction you're going to, and I'll explain that in a minute. So the lower you are, for safety reasons, the better. But it's that trade-off, and that's part of your pre-planning. As for checking in itself, once you've checked into your hotel, what I always do is I scout my route to the nearest exit. And this, again, this is purely through experience. I've been caught in a hotel fire. And what I do as a tip is when I'm looking, I actually stand with my back against the room door I'm in and then look at my direction. So if it's left, I know when I come out the room, it's left. If you do it the other way around, as you're going into the room, go, okay, yeah, it's left to that door. It's very easy to be confused when you come out because it's actually the other direction. And it may sound simple, but if there's smoke in that corridor, there's fire alarms, it's very, very easy to make that first mistake and go in the wrong direction. So, yeah, scouting that fire escape, knowing where it is very important.
Yeah, definitely, mate. I mean, another point is I've noticed that sometimes all those fire instructions are in Spanish or Mexican, or they're not always going to be in English. So do your own route recce.
Yeah, for sure, 100%. I mean, I've stayed in the hotel and I've done the route recce, and I opened the fire door to check, and I'm glad I did because there was a mattress on the staircase. What are you doing there? But that route was blocked to me. You know, so I went to the other way and it was clear. I mentioned to the hotel staff when I went down, but, you know, again, that little moment you go in there, your route's blocked, that little bit of panic sets in, your initial plan is out the window. And if you haven't got a plan B, then it can quickly go sour.
I think something also to think about, you know, we talked about, you know, sort of fake wallets and the like is, you know, something that if someone does try to break into the hotel, I'm not saying they will, but you know, someone tries to get to you, things are little door wedges just to secure your door at night to stop intruders, you know, random intruders coming into the hotel, a little door wedge in your pack underneath the door will save you time potentially to make a phone call.
Yeah, sure, it's a good one. You know, always put the chain on. Most hotel doors have the lock. Always put it on. It, you know, doesn't do any harm. It takes seconds to do, and it's just that extra barrier. If someone's to force their way in, it just gives that little bit of time.
Yeah, definitely. Well, Jay, I mean, you're obviously a seasoned traveller and a man who will continue to travel. And I think it's important that, you know, podcasts like this are given out there to everybody to learn. Because every day is a school day, and as COVID starts to, or we get used to living with COVID and travel returns, we're all going to be traveling. So is there anything you'd like just to sort of finish on, Jay, as I look forward?
Not really. Like I say, it's all in the pre-planning. Think about where you're going, what you're carrying, and think about your destination. Do that hotel check. I've been there. It can make a huge difference. Just take 2 minutes to recce that route.
Okay, great. Well, Jay, thanks so much for your time today, and bon voyage, safe travels.
Thank you very much. I've enjoyed it.
Thanks, Jay.
All right, bye now.